Welcome to the Travel Stories Podcast with your hosts, Trevor Mountcastle and Tom Kim. This week, we talk about Tom's most recent cruise, but this time, he's cheated on Royal Caribbean. Welcome, Tom. I'm just so happy to be back here with you.
I know. It's good to be back. It's been a couple of weeks since we've done this.
Well, gosh, I mean, you had a 10-day cruise. You know, while we've tried in the past to do a recording from a ship, and one of these days we are going to try that. We didn't want to do it this time. Why don't you tell us, since just as we've tried to do of late over the past few episodes, we've tried to not talk about each other's travel before we talk on the podcast. So why don't you tell us about your most recent cruise?
Yeah, so I did a 10-night Eastern Caribbean cruise on Princess, the Enchanted Princess, leaving from Fort Lauderdale. Definitely a new experience for me. I never have done a Princess cruise before. A lot of things are very similar to Royal Caribbean and other cruise lines that I've cruised before, and some things are significantly different. A lot of it's more of the subtle things. You know, it's not like, you know, a lot of the ways the ships operate, it's going to be the same, no matter which company you sail with. You know, a lot of the things are going to be, you're going to have a buffet, you're going to have a main dining room, you're going to have entertainment, you're going to have problems with the elevators, you're going to have, you know, crowded boats, or, you know, there's going to be lots of, you know, pet peeves and things. But I definitely felt like it's a different experience on Princess.
It's interesting, and I think we'll get to a lot of the different components, but it's interesting that you say crowded boats. Do you mean crowded boats like launches, like tendering to get to your ports? Or do you mean, or did you make the sacrilege of calling the cruise ship, a boat?
Oh, well, I probably did make that. I probably did commit sacrilege, but they also did tender at least one of the ports. And yeah, so we actually did get on boats.
And that's an uncommon thing on the Royal Caribbean side. So was this fairly new to you? I mean, you've been on so many different cruises.
I've definitely had to tender before and also on Royal Caribbean, but the place where we had to tender was actually Princess's private island, you know, their Princess Key, where, you know, they have their own, you know, beach and, you know, buffet set up and, you know, they basically, you know, it's their own private beach area for their cruise ships.
But they don't have a big enough pier to support one or two ships?
They do not. It's very surprising, actually. Quite honestly, it takes away from the experience quite a bit. I mean, you know, having to tender to get there, I mean, it added so much more time, both getting there and getting off of the island. And it does detract pretty severely from the experience. I think I had to wait in line good maybe 40 minutes or something like that to get back onto the boat, which is kind of ridiculous.
For their own private island?
Yeah, for their own private island. And it was only one ship. It wasn't like there were multiple ships there.
I could almost see that as being a huge detract to going to their private island.
Coco Cay and Royal Caribbean, they've got it unlocked. They know what they're doing. They've got the pier. They've got a lot of amenities. They've got, you know, the biggest pool in the Caribbean. They even have a new area. They have a new adults area that's just opened up recently, Hideaway Beach or whatever. But yeah, I was not that impressed with the Princess private island.
You say that about the Hideaway Beach. I've only gotten about an email a day on that since we've got our cruise coming up in about a month. So I am indeed aware of that.
Yes, yes. They want you to buy a pass, you know, for you and your kid.
Yeah, of course. I'm sure our daughter would just be so welcomed in the adult-only area. Let's start at the kind of embarkation. You know, we talk about the embarkation being kind of a hit or miss thing. You know, you schedule your time to board, or at least RCL, Royal Caribbean, is you schedule your time to board. It's that first, 6 hours where you're just like, oh my God, what did I get myself into? Because you see everybody and you literally see the most people on the ship in all the public areas. And it's like the first and the last time, but like that first 6 hours is like, if I can get through this, this is going to be a fun cruise.
You know, it is kind of interesting that, you know, you do have that kind of trial by fire, right? You know, the most people you're ever going to see in that buffet is that first time you go to that buffet in the public areas, because you've got all those people milling around because they haven't opened the rooms up yet.
So how did Princess do it? Did they do it better than Royal? Did they do it worse than Royal? Or did they do it different?
I think they did a good job. Royal doesn't always do it well either. I mean, you know, we've had times where it's taken longer, or, you know, it's you know, not been as smooth. But I think in general, Royal does a good job. And Princess on this one, again, I only have one data point for them. I think they did a pretty good job. And part of it, I think, is one of the big differentiators, and this is a plus actually, is, you know, they have this medallion system, you know, on Princess. So they have these kind of wearables that have, you know, some sort of NFC transmitter on them so that you know, when you get close to, let's say, a door, you know, it opens for you, or, you know, there are various antennas all over the ship. So they kind of, you know, it's kind of big brothery, but, you know, they know where you are, you know, on the ship, you know, they can detect your location. And that ends up being extremely nice for, you know, your shipmates, because you can, you know, go on their app and just say, okay, where are the people who are I'm sailing with? You can find out where they are and try to meet up with them. Because, you know, that's not always the easiest thing to do on a big boat like that, and or big ship. Sorry, I keep making that mistake. But the other advantage, at least from an embarkation standpoint, is many of the people, many of the, especially the loyal to princess type people, you know, they'll have their medallions sent out to them well in advance. They kind of have a separate lane, you know, that really does cut down on the embarkation logistics, you know, because they've got their credentials already. You know, they've got the little, you know, doohickey, the medallion that lets them on board and lets them do whatever they need to do.
That's interesting. Yeah, I hadn't heard about this whole medallion thing. I get that it's a big brother thing, but I mean, you're on a ship anyway. There's cameras everywhere. I don't feel like it's any more intrusive than, you know, the cameras that you see on these ships anyway. And if it's opening doors, like literally, I assume you meant that literally, not just figuratively.
It didn't always work for me, but, you know, I think for the most part, you know, I think when it's working correctly, you know, within a few feet of you walking close to the door, it should unlock it. And that makes it a lot easier, especially if you're carrying, you know, let's say a plate of food or towels or, you know, whatever else you're carrying to come, you know, back and forth from your room. It's nice that the room recognizes you and it's unlocked for you as you approach it.
I think that's awesome. And the idea, just as a parent, and obviously my child is not old enough to kind of be out on her own, but as a parent, it seems like a great thing just to be able to track a little bit more, or to be able to see, you know, on the app, if my daughter happened to want to go to the kids club or, you know, wander around the ship. I think that's pretty cool. I've seen, you know, that talked about. I've obviously never experienced it, but it sounds like it worked out well for you, you know, when it worked.
I think it's a plus. I think other cruise ships should adopt it. And I think it's one of the ways that one of the pluses, you know, for a princess, you know, I'm not saying, say there's some other negatives. We can probably talk about some of that. But yeah, one of the pluses was definitely the technology that they used when it worked was actually pretty cool.
Well, I want to stay on the positives if we can. You know, we'll talk about some of the negatives, but, you know, we kind of do that as that little sandwich, right? You know, you talk about the positives, then the negatives, then you finish off with the positives. There's a more, shall we say, colloquial phrase for that sandwich, but we'll just talk about it as the sandwich. So before we get too far into it, you had a 10-day cruise on, I think you said, the Princess Enchantment. Which,
the Enchanted Princess.
Enchanted Princess. Yes, yes, yes. Because the princess brands like to do their descriptive name before, and then they all end in princess. Almost like Fairmont's Southampton Princess and Hamilton Princess, two hotels that are close to my heart in Bermuda. So you had 10 days. Where did you go? What ports did you see? How many days at sea? Just give us some perspective. So we've talked about fairly large ships. The Wonder of the Seas is the now the second largest cruise ship on the seas, because the Icon of the Seas has now been delivered on the royal side. My understanding is that Princess Cruises are generally small. My parents enjoy, I don't know which particular one. I think they've been on the Island Princess and probably like five others. And they enjoy them because they are so small and intimate. Was this one of their smaller ones?
I wouldn't say it would be one of their smaller ones. I would put them more in the kind of middle of the band kind of in terms of size of ship. So I would put them kind of equivalent to, I think maybe if you're speaking of from a Royal Caribbean perspective, maybe like a Quantum of the Seas kind of class of ship. It's about, I think, 3,600, 3,500 people full occupancy, and we're pretty close to that, I think. Maybe not completely full, but I think they were within maybe 100 or 200 guests of full.
So 3,600 is not an intimate experience.
Not really. Princess is actually pretty consistent, so they have a lot of ships that are about the same size. So they may have some smaller ships, but I would put this in a larger ship category, although definitely not in anywhere close to the 6,000 or 7,000 you'd have on like an Oasis or an Icon type class ship.
Okay. So you're on a large or a mid-sized, you know, mid to large size ship. You said that you had 3 sea days. What were your ports of call?
So we had their private island, Princess K. We went to Dominica. We also went to St. Lucia, St. Thomas, and Martinique and Antigua. Those were the ports.
That sounds like a really nice cadre of ports.
Yeah, I was able to add 4 more countries to my list of countries visited.
As we were talking about that, I was thinking about that exact point. I made the stupid mistake of wondering, you know, whether Martinique was just another part of St. Martin. Obviously, you steered me right, and I could have just as easily not mention that on the pod, but why don't you tell us about your experience? Well, was Martinique your second port, or?
I think it was like maybe the fourth, I think. I think last was Antigua. But yeah, Martinique actually is a French overseas protectorate. And, you know, it's always going to be like kind of how you count some of these. I mean, I use an app to do that, and I still mark it off, you know, and it's on the list.
If it shows it on the list, it counts.
Yeah. It doesn't count as a UN country, but it might count as, I don't know, something. I don't know how it's counting it. Dominica and Antigua, those are definitely countries, as is, trying to think if there's another one on there.
St. Lucia
as well. Yeah.
That is.
So those are all separate countries.
Wow.
St. Thomas, of course, is a U.S. Virgin Island. The Princess Cay is in the Bahamas, but I've already been in the Bahamas.
So we're going to be a little bit scattershot here, as we've already started to be. We wanted this to be a little bit unscripted. You gave me just a couple of bullet points before we started of your experience. So by my very nature, I'm going to be scattershot.
I think that's okay. I think people have come to expect us to be a little bit more extemporaneous.
There we go. Okay.
To use a $20 word.
I like that word too. I'm not going to say it three times fast though. So your first stop was Princess Cay. That sounded like it was pretty lackluster, obviously, based on, you know, fairly limited experience. It's clear that Royal knows how to do it right. Princess, even though their ships might be, you know, about 60% of the size, are probably not quite hitting the mark. What was your second stop?
Second stop, I believe, was St. Thomas. And actually, we didn't even get off the boat because we had been to St. Thomas several times, or I have been to St. Thomas a couple of times, and honestly, wasn't that looking forward to getting off. And the weather was kind of overcast as well, so we didn't even get off.
Was that Charlotte Amalier or a different port?
I think that's right. I'm not remembering off the top of my head, but
Well, let me ask it a different way. Was it the same port we visited when we were on the Wonder of the Seas? If I were you, I wouldn't have gotten off either.
I mean, you do it once or twice, you're good. I mean, you go have your banana daiquiri at the top of the mountain. You know, you go shopping, you go visit the president's, you know, house or governor's house or whatever, and you climb up the million stairs, and I think you're okay.
Yeah, yeah. I still remember. So I went there when I was 16 for my 16th birthday. That wasn't the reason we were going. We went for a close family friend's wedding, but they happened to get married on the 16th of October. My birthday is the day before, and it was at Blackbeard's Castle and not Blackbeard's Castle. There was a Marriott that was like Blackbeard something. I'd have to go back and check. But my memory of St. Thomas is a little bit different, even though I had gone there on a cruise first. But that main city, I don't think it's Charlotte Amalia, because it seemed like it was on a different part of the island where like the Hard Rock is and some of the other stuff. So like when we did that Charlotte Amalia on the Wonder of the Seas, I was sort of like, well, this is completely different than what I remember. That experience when I was 16 years old, we're not even going to try to say how many years ago that was. I just still remember my father driving on the island. They drive on the other side of the road.
You know, that's the weird thing. They drive on the other side of the road, but the wheels in the cars are generally on the American side. They're driving. The drivers themselves are on the left side.
Just imagine being behind the wheel and forgetting that and getting on their faster roads. So you stayed on the ship in St. Thomas. Where'd you go from there?
So I think after that, we went to Dominica, which is probably the least developed of the islands that we went to. Definitely feels like there's a lot more development that could come to that island. Not a ton there, but a lot of natural beauty. You know, we went to one of the beaches, a black sand beach that had a active volcanic vent in the ocean. And it's called Champagne Beach, probably sparking your interest all of a sudden. And the reason why it's called Champagne Beach is because it has that active fissure, and you can snorkel to this area where these bubbles bubbling up from the ocean floor that you can see as you snorkel there. And of course, they look like champagne bubbles. And it's a very warm area there. You can feel the temperature difference from the volcanic heat that's kind of rising up from the ocean floor. And it was just interesting. It was definitely worth the visit just to see that one thing, because that's unique. I don't think you can see that in too many places.
Wow. So you went there, you swam out, you snorkeled the volcanic vent.
That's right.
That's awesome. And it's funny because we talk about so many different things. I realized that in general, I like to think that I'm familiar with a lot of kind of unique aspects of different destinations. And I had never heard of that one. So that's awesome. I'm putting that on my list.
I would definitely add it to, I mean, there's a couple of those type of volcanic type of natural attractions on that island. I would definitely keep them on your list, especially in, you're right. It's not something that I think is well publicized or you know, well, it's funny, you know, because, you know, for better or for worse, you know, I feel like I go on YouTube and try to see what people have posted about different locations. And there's hardly anything about, you know, Dominica, you know, and look what the attractions are. There's very limited information. And quite honestly, that's one of those things where you think, you know, there'd be a lot of influencers or somebody, you know, going out there, taking their underwater cameras and going to town. But nope, not yet.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's also an interesting thing. Like, you know, as an East Coaster, especially given the experiences that I've had on the Big Island of Hawaii and really just Hawaii in general, let alone, you know, what we've had in so many international destinations, it's so easy to forget that there are remnants of volcanoes or volcanic activity in the East Coast. Like, it's just not something that, like, you know, despite the amount of times I've been to Bermuda, for example, that I would internalize. Went on honeymoon, and my wife is, "Hey, this looks really familiar." I'm like, "Oh, okay." Just never really made the connection that we had volcanic activity off the eastern seaboard.
Well, it's a bit older, you know. It's definitely more dormant volcanoes and things like that from a geological time perspective. I guess it's not like the Pacific Rim, right, where you've got, you know, all that activity in like Hawaii and, you know, Japan and elsewhere. You know, you look at the Atlantic Ocean, you look at the East Coast, there are definitely volcanoes around there. And, you know, you just have to look at Iceland, you know, that's erupting currently, I think.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. And not to mention a few years ago with, I'll attempt it, I'm not going to attempt it.
Yeah, I was like, why are you attempting it? That's just setting yourself up for failure, my friend.
Yes, 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 yes. Although I do, gosh, Iceland's another beautiful country. But this is not about Iceland. This is about a Caribbean.
I would love to make it there. It's still not on my list. I have not crossed it off. I have not been to Iceland yet.
It is. Okay, we'll take a second here. I highly recommend it. You know what? Actually, let's put a pin in that and save it for another pod, because I've got some really fun stories from Iceland. That is a fun little country.
Well, and we'll put a pin in it. We'll foreshadow a future episode.
Yes, yes, yes. I mean, that's the beauty of this pod, right? You know, we call it travel stories for a reason. You know, so much travel that everyone gets the chance to take. I mean, you know, there are just so many stories that you come home with. So where'd you go after Dominica?
After Dominica, I think we went to St. Lucia. And again, that was also not one of my favorite ports. I think we went out to the city, we took a look around. You know, we probably could have, you know, found a nice beach to hang out at and have fun at, but we didn't do that. And I personally didn't find, you know, walking around and seeing the sights of the main town there to be all that interesting. So I'm probably not doing it justice. There probably is something amazing about St. Lucia that I didn't experience myself. But definitely one of the lower points of the various ports that we visited on this trip.
And was there a particular port that you were in, or does St. Lucia just have the one port?
I forget what the name of the port was, but it was kind of the container port. So I think the size of our ship, the Enchanted Princess, it was large enough that, you know, a lot of these cities will have a smaller pier for, you know, kind of the 1,000, 2,000 class of passenger kind of cruise ships. And then I think once you hit that 3,000 and above, they might put you in some of these container ports or commercial ports, because that's the type of pier that can accommodate the size of ship.
Yeah, I could see how that would kind of detract from the experience.
You know, one of the other pluses, though, I will say, you know, again, Princess definitely does advertise themselves as a kind of a premium line. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, is pretty, you know, representative of this is, you know, a premium line will set up a little tent. So they'll have some seating area. They'll have, you know, various waters, and they'll have staff sitting out there with a tray of chill towels, you know, if it's a warm climate, or potentially a tray of hot cocoa if it's a cold climate. And that's kind of the welcome back that you receive, you know, getting back on board on one of these, you know, cruise ships, Princess cruise ship in, you know, in one of the ports. So that was definitely a plus. You know, Royal Caribbean doesn't do that. I'm pretty sure Carnival doesn't do that. You know, this is probably Princess celebrity and above that would probably do this, a little bit of extra service to just give you that slightly elevated welcome back to the ship.
Not to take a little bit of a tangent, but yeah, as you're explaining this sounded exactly like your celebrity experience. In fact, you know, let's take just a moment. We're about halfway through. Do you want to try to compare your celebrity to Princess, or do you want to wait until we finish all your ports of call here?
Why don't we get through the ports of call, and we'll talk about some of my conclusions toward the end. And I think that's probably the more cohesive way to do it.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Sorry. Again, I like to jump around. I like to kind of spice it up. So St. Lucia, the container port berthing. After that, I think you said that Martinique was the next.
I liked Martinique. I would definitely go back. This time it was a little bit more in the center of town, the cruise terminal. Definitely walking distance to a good portion of the main city there. Fort de France, which I think is where the port was. There was a ferry terminal not too far away from there. You could hop on a local ferry to different parts of Martinique. We did that. We went to a portion of Martinique that's kind of across the harbor, and there was a beautiful beach there. We didn't spend a lot of time at the beach, but you know, we had lunch there, right there, ocean, you know, ocean view, beach view lunch, which was very nice, about a 20-euro lunch. And then we did a little bit of walking around there, and then we made our way back onto the ship. It was a short stop. I mean, I think the all aboard time was maybe like 3:30 or something, so didn't have a ton of time. Got a taste of Martinique. I liked it. It reminded me a lot of other French overseas territories, whether it be St. Martin or, you know, New Caledonia, you know, kind of had that kind of feel. You definitely felt like you were in, you know, part of France. You know, they had, you know, other patisseries and, you know, nice bakeries and things. And, you know, you saw a lot of Europeans and you saw a lot of, you know, you hear a lot of French being spoken. So definitely had that French flair.
Heck, I'm putting that on my list. I mean, gosh, and not only that, it really does sound European if you're able to have a lunch for only 20 euro.
Yep, we had the menu du jour, which was, you know, a starter, you know, an entree and some ice cream for dessert. I wouldn't say it was the best food I ever had. And, you know, I'm not sure if I'm going to be in a rush to get back there. But, you know, honestly, for a nice beachside lunch, it was great.
It does sound pretty nice. So you said you had another port after that one.
Yep, the last port was Antigua. And they have this big marketing thing. They have 365 beaches. I don't know if they actually have 365 beaches, but clearly that marketing is working because we heard it mentioned and referenced like multiple times. And so that was in somewhat of an interesting experience. You know, we did go, friends of mine, you know, one of my friends was kind of adamant about, you know, trying the local bus, which I was a little bit wary of. And, you know, I was kind of like, well, you know, and the place we were going, we ended up going to a place called English Harbor, which is kind of like this, you know, colonial Williamsburg place where they have the Nelson, the, you know, Admiral Horatio Nelson dockyards, you know, with, you know, all the original buildings and everything and a little bit of a museum. So anyway, we took a local bus to get there. I was just worried because, you know, I'm like, is this going to really add a lot of time? More than anything, I was just worried, like, you know, is this just going to, you know, be much longer than having to just, you know, take the taxi? But it ended up being fine. You know, we got there in a fair amount of time and, you know, to my friend Dion, you know, she's going to probably be like, yes, I know. Yes, you're right. It was fine. I would make that admission now. Anyway, we went to that English Harbor area. That was interesting to see, but not anything crazy. Not anything I, you know, go out of my way to go visit. But, you know, it is a UNESCO World Heritage Site, which is probably why it was on her list to go visit. And then we took a very quick water taxi to the beach that was also part of English Harbor. And we ended up, you know, spending a couple hours there. You know, I definitely got my share of sun and, you know, got to dip my myself into the ocean and spend a good amount of time enjoying the sun, enjoying the water, enjoying the waves. Unfortunately, enjoying the sand because it was a little windy. So fortunately, there was a nice little restaurant bar where we could kind of station ourselves and stay away from the sand because unfortunately, we didn't have any beach chairs or anything for rent. So, you know, I think if you were sitting on the beach itself, you got a little sandy from the sand getting kicked up.
A little sand exfoliation.
Yeah, except, you know, this I don't need to exfoliate my hair or other parts of me. That wouldn't necessarily help. I don't need to exfoliate my diet soda or anything like that. So we had, a couple appetizers, a couple drinks at this bar before we took a taxi back. It was a beautiful day. It was just nice. So I like Antigua, another port I would definitely not hesitate going back to.
Fantastic. So I think we've covered all your ports. Why don't we talk about the onboard experience? You want to start with the dining?
I actually thought the dining was pretty good. The biggest complaint with the dining would be, and this probably wouldn't be a complaint for you, but you know, for some of us that like a little spice or a little bit more of a international flair or maybe a non-European flair with their cuisine, this is not necessarily the food cruise for you. Like their attempts at Asian food were a little bit lackluster and all very bland, strangely enough. So if you're looking for some authentic taste of the Orient, no, not in Princess Cruises.
So one experience that I think we've had on most of the Royal Caribbean cruises is that there's an Indian usually on kind of the head chef staff, so to speak. And so we usually see an Indian dish. While it's usually too spicy for me, I love the fact it's an option. Did you see or notice what the composition of the chef staff was? Like, why you think that there might not have been?
I could see maybe the head staff. I would probably imagine the galley crew and all of them are, from a demographic standpoint, probably not that dissimilar to what you'd find on Royal Caribbean. But I would say maybe the higher level chefs, maybe like the executive chefs or, you know, chef de cuisine or what, you know, maybe some of them were more European.
The folks that are making the menu, in other words.
Yeah, that are making the menu or are in charge of, you know, directing, you know, the taste and the flavor of the food. And, you know, some of that might be, you know, honestly, it might be a historic thing. You know, it might be, this is probably aligned with a lot of history, a lot of loyal customers that have been loyal and cruising this line for many, many, many years. I mean, this was the love boat, you know, basically, you know, for those who can remember that show from the 70s and the 80s that kind of helped make cruising popular. Yeah, so I think that they just have a bit of a more conservative take on dining and their cuisine. So it's a lot more like European style cuisine. And again, it's going to tend to be a little bit less spice, a little bit more bland. And that might be a good segue to the demographic or the type of people that they're catering to. And that is very noticeable, especially on a 10-night cruise. I think a 10-night cruise by its nature being longer is going to skew a little bit older from a demographic standpoint. And boy, was it. It was a bit of a shock to me, a culture shock to me, because the number of families on board was very small, very few children, very few younger people. And, you know, I'm not exactly spring chicken, but, you know, I was probably in the lower decile of passengers, you know, in terms of age on that cruise, you know, in terms of people in their 40s were not terribly well represented, while people in their, you know, 60s, 70s, and 80s were, you know, definitely overrepresented. And I think that's kind of what you're going to see more on a Princess cruise, because I think a lot of what you'll see, the entertainment, the amenities on board, they're catering to that style or that demographic of cruiser. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but, you know, it's just, if you are a person with a young family, if you have younger kids or even kids that are, you know, maybe more middle-aged, you know, that need activities and need, you know, fun things to do like water slides and, you know, other kinds of enrichment on board, you might not find it on a Princess cruise because it is much more catering to that, you know, retiree, to that kind of classic cruiser is kind of what I feel like you're going to get on a Princess cruise.
You know, I wonder if that's because the demographic has sort of been skewing that way for the kind of folks with more disposable income, you know, the folks with more time that, you know, might be willing to drop $6,000 to $10,000 on a cruise. Because obviously, you know, I think if you look at trends, we've seen that starting probably over the last 10 or 20 years. I had missed your comment about the love boat heritage, though. I don't know whether this cruise line, Princess Cruise Line, has kind of skewed toward the older travelers the entire time, or if they just sort of saw where the bouncing ball was going and kind of, you know, geared themselves a little bit more toward that higher age.
The cruise lines themselves are able to do it in a way by signaling, you know? And I think the way you signal is you look at the style of the decor, you look at the activities, you look at the types of venues that are on these ships, you know, you're going to see them skew toward, I think, the clientele that is attracted to those things. So I think going back to your statement about how does this compare to celebrity, you know, I think celebrity also skews a little bit older, but I think celebrity is looking to be a bit more stylish, a little bit more of the more like kind of yuppie kind of cruiser, where I think Princess is going to be a little bit more of the more refined luxury, a little bit more refined, but it's going to be more staid. To me, it'd be the equivalent of a difference between a Ritz-Carlton and a W, right? So to me, celebrity cruises, they're going to be a bit more avant-garde, like a W, and Princess cruise is going to be more on the Ritz-Carlton side, where you're going to see, you know, nice, lovely, rich woods, you know, on hallways and things like that. And you're going to have afternoon tea, but you're not going to have a ton of, let's say, Asian specialty restaurants, you know, or you're not going to have a ton of the type of enrichment and the type of other activities. Are going to be a lot of trivias. You know, there's going to be some, you know, morning Zumba and those type of things, but they're not necessarily going to be, I don't know, salsa dancing or, you know, some other things that might be a little bit different that you might see on celebrity.
Oh gosh, that brings two things I just have to say. So the first thing, I just wonder, when you make the comparison of celebrity to the W, how many W's have you stayed at? Because some of these W's that I've stayed at definitely don't skew themselves toward family friendly, I'll say.
Well, and I don't think celebrity does either. I think both of these cruise lines are not necessarily for families, if I had to guess. I mean, again, I think Royal Caribbean is your family line. I mean, this is where you need to go if you've got younger kids, and if you've got even middle-aged kids, you know, that's where you need to go because they've got the amenities that match up with those interests, you know, and for the multi-generational, you know, cruiser, you know, where you got grandpa and grandma and, you know, you got the parents, you got the kids, you got the grandchildren, you know, you got all those people. There's something for everybody. It's kind of the Cheesecake Factory of cruising. And celebrity, I think, is meant to be a little bit more premium, a little bit more upscale, and definitely does not have many amenities for kids. You know, it's going to have more artwork and maybe classical music, you know, being played in the atrium and champagne bars and, you know, not that Royal doesn't also have those things, but it's going to just have them a little bit more prominent and a little bit more focus on that. You're going to see the design of the cabins. You know, you're going to see, I would say probably some of the newer cruise ships that Celebrity has is going to be closer to a design focus as maybe something like Virgin versus, you know, Princess, which is going to have a little bit more of the classic kind of look, you know. Even, and I don't know, of course they have a new ship that's coming out, so I don't know what they're changing, but there's a lot of consistency with Princess, and I think a lot of their cruise lines are going to look very similar. It's going to be kind of a little bit of an older style.
So essentially Celebrity more like Virgin, which I totally see with the, some of the stuff they've come out with, the Solstice class, that sort of thing. And then Princess more like perhaps Cunard.
I think if you wanted to do that, you're right. I think you're going to see Princess skew toward more toward Cunard. And then you're going to have the Celebrity skew quite a bit more. You know, it's funny. I talked to some Celebrity cruisers, you know, because you find them. There's a little bit of, you know, internecine mixing, you know, between Royal Caribbean and Celebrity. Because, you know, of course, they're the same company. And they grant similar status or similar perks between, you know, Celebrity cruisers that come on Royal Caribbean and vice versa. So I've talked to Celebrity cruisers and, you know, you've got that old guard that love the Solstice ships or the Constellation ships or, you know, the Millennium class ships that are kind of the older ships that are more along the lines of Princess. And then all the new ships have these things like infinity balconies and they have
that thing that goes up and down on the side, the almost cantilever bar area.
That's very divisive because you have some cruisers that love it and other cruisers say it's a disaster. And, you know, there's some cruisers that are like, you know, you go to the trivia and they love the fact that they're doing the trivia on tablets. And then you have the other cruisers are like, oh, where's my piece of paper? Where's my pencil?
I want to be in the dark ages. Sorry for any listeners. I'm being funny.
Yeah, but, you know, and I understand because, you know, it's like, why bother having a trivia in a room with people when you're kind of, the whole point is to have a little bit of interaction, right? And to have crew staff, and why have it be digital? Because, you know, you could just do that in your room. You don't need to go to an area or room to have a trivia event, you know.
You want that social aspect.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, so I totally get that.
That's the kind of discussion that you hear, you know, as far as, you know, differences in some of these lines.
No, and that makes a ton of sense. I mean, as we've talked through this, it just really makes me think, number one, you know, we're not a cruising podcast, but we talk about cruising probably more than enough to try to need to kind of expand a little bit of the experience. I don't know.
Sorry, listeners. Sorry for all the cruise talk.
I don't know if we can, you know, put you on assignment to go experience Cunard and Disney, or if we should try to get, I know Michael Traeger over at Travelzork, we've had him on the podcast in the past. He has done a transatlantic on Cunard. And actually a guest we're going to have coming on soon to talk on a different topic is a frequent Disney cruiser. You know, as we're talking through this, I think we're probably going to want to try to continue to build out a little bit of the cruising, not to change the path of the podcast. What I think we've always wanted to do is to sort of, you know, kind of follow the trends, maybe be even a little bit ahead of the trends.
Well, you know, it is part of our travel experience. You know, I do cruise a lot and, you know, that's part of travel stories, right? Let's share the experiences and try to educate people or entertain people, you know, with some of what we've experienced, you know, and hopefully they learn something or they're entertained by, you know, some of the little, the hijinks or, you know, or some of the things that we learn, you know, as we try these different things.
So I guess what I'd put out to our listeners, if there is a particular cruise line that you've been on that we haven't talked about, reach out to us. We'd love to talk to you. I think while it's not, you know, the central theme of the podcast, I think it'd be really interesting to be able to just sort of talk through and kind of share experiences. There's so many different cruise lines out there that, you know, you, TK, and I probably will never darken the doors of or, you know, or ask to come aboard, so to speak.
Well, speak for yourself, Trevor. I would love to try all those different cruise lines. You know, I'm making a little bit of a dent this year. I'm trying Princess for the first time, as I just did. And I have a Carnival cruise for Labor Day this year. So that's another one that I've yet to try. And we'll see how that goes.
May God have mercy on your soul on that Carnival cruise. Having been on a few, I'm just going to say, block out the following week or two. Don't plan a trip. You know, shortly after, you're probably going to be in bed.
It's not that bad.
I say that joking. You know, when we did our Norwegian cruise on the Carnival Pride, we all came back with COVID. I don't want to say that every cruise ends that way, but definitely a different experience, a different party. And when I say a different party, it is. We won't go down the Carnival path. So we talked about the food. Tell us about the entertainment. I know that you are an aficionado of cruise line entertainment, and really any entertainment, really. Royal Caribbean has, in my experience, really set the bar. How did the Enchanted Princess fare?
You know, considering it was a 10-night cruise, and, you know, I did attend quite a bit of the nightly entertainment, I thought they did a decent job. I would not put them at the same level of Norwegian or Royal Caribbean. I think they both do a possibly a better job, in my humble opinion. They did have a couple of production shows. They had a couple of guest entertainers. I think the quality of some of the guest entertainers was not particularly high. You know, they were okay. I mean, I didn't walk out. Although I did hear some of the comedians were worth walking out on. Apparently, some of them were really bad. You know, I thought the production shows were fine. You know, they're probably right in the same league of some of the other kind of song and dance type shows that you'll see on other cruise lines. Do you think Royal Caribbean sets the bar very high, especially on their newer ships? Because they're just, you know, there's the variety and the different types of entertainment are just, it's hard to beat when you've got different venues like that are ice skating rinks and, you know, aqua theaters and, you know, Broadway musicals and things like that, that it's hard to beat that.
Okay. Now the two hard questions. Was there a lobster tail night in the dining room?
You know, this is a plus. I think there was a lobster tail night, and dare I say the lobster was a little tastier than the Royal Caribbean lobster, although it was maybe a little bit more on the salty side, which is probably why I liked it. I tend to like my stuff a little bit saltier. But, you know, if you wanted a second lobster, again, it wasn't going to be free, but the cost for an additional one was only like, I think, $10, where I think Royal wants quite a bit more for their second lobster. So I would say in general, if you are a lobster lover, I think you're probably better off on Princess than you would be on, let's say, a Royal cruise.
So first tension-y competition goes to Princess. Next one, how frequent was the housekeeping?
Oh, you know what? It's interesting that you're picking these two. These are definitely two pluses for Princess. Princess was still doing the twice daily housekeeping. Our steward was amazing. He was really good, proactive, you know, basically, you know, was a magician at basically disappearing and not being seen and just like cleaning our room when we're not there. So kudos to Princess, and their staff and the service was actually pretty good. Their people were definitely on quality people again. And that's saying something because, you know, Royal Caribbean also has, I find, very, very good, genuine, happy staff. And I think Princess can give them a run for their money. And the fact that their policy was still to do twice daily housekeeping. And again, it's a more premium line, so maybe that makes sense. But they continue to do twice daily housekeeping, and that is just a little bit nicer, especially when you're in the Caribbean. You're going to showering a little bit more often, and you're going to be using a few more towels than you might otherwise.
And to be honest with you, those both sync with what I think of as a more premium cruise line. I'm not surprised. I asked those questions not knowing what your answer was going to be.
You guessed correctly. Yeah, those are definitely two signs of the fact that, you know, your price point is probably going to be a little bit higher on Princess in some cases, and you know, you're gonna get what you pay for in some cases.
Okay, and then the last one, not really a debated topic, so to speak, but we talk a lot on the Royal Caribbean side about, you know, gambling, not just because gambling is interesting and we enjoy it, right? But also because there's that angle to getting free cruises. So talk a moment, if you could, about the casino, number one, and then number two, if you engaged with their onboard gaming program and whether or not you saw any opportunities to kind of game it or travel hack it.
So, you know, I think that there is absolutely an opportunity. I don't think it's as generous maybe as Royal Caribbean, because Royal Caribbean has set the bar, you know, what it takes to get a free cruise pretty low. You know, I think your casual gambler can absolutely attain a free cruise on Royal Caribbean just by doing a reasonable amount of gaming, you know, on board. To do that on a Princess, it's going to take quite a bit more volume, probably more than your casual gambler would do. I did some gambling on this cruise. I did lose a few hundred dollars, but, you know, but I didn't do a tremendous amount. I didn't receive any kind of offer or receive any kind of comp or anything like that. Again, you know, you never know. Maybe they'll market to me at some later point. But I also played quite a bit of table games and only did, you know, a small amount of slots gambling. That really does affect things. You know, I think if I had done probably spent the amount of time that I did in that casino exclusively on slots, I probably would have received something, you know, whether it be, you know, a couple of dollars off, you know, maybe some sort of complimentary cruise. I know my friend who was also joining me also spent a fair amount of time in the casino, and they did exclusively stay to slot machines. They received a free balcony 7-night cruise with free play on this, but, you know, they were probably doing more than the casual amount of gaming. So I think if you are a heavy gamer, I think, and you know, I think you absolutely have an opportunity. I think if you are a casual gamer, and when I say casual, you know, if you're okay losing a couple hundred dollars, you know, in a slot machine, that's what I consider a, you know, casual gamer, then I probably wouldn't expect very much from Princess. You'd probably be better off at a Carnival or a Royal Caribbean, because, you know, I think they're dealing with a lower price point in some cases to offer you something. Also, the casino was kind of small. You know, it was actually, for the size of vessel, it was probably maybe 60% the size of, let's say, the casino that's on a similarly sized Royal Caribbean ship. They did have a craps table, which I, you know, had a lot of fun at. And they also, there is a little bit of a manufactured spend opportunity as well. You know, they do have charge to your room, both at the slot machine and at the table games. The one, again, another plus is that you aren't going to be charged a service fee of like 3% or something when charging chips at the table games, where you are going to get that if you're not an elite player at Royal Caribbean. The other thing you can do, which is a very, very lengthy and arduous process, is you can buy Princess gift cards and get those applied to your onboard account and cash that out at the casino. But it is a relatively painful, a manual process where you have to go to guest services, present a printout of your gift card, and have them manually process it. So that's a kind of painful process.
It sounds like you did that.
I did.
Worth it or no?
I mean, I'm glad I did. And I got basically bought some discounted gift cards, you know, 8% off at AARP. So, you know, it saved some money, but it also required sitting in line for a good, you know, 20, 30 minutes. And even then they had to do it later because it took them forever to process it. They were like, okay, we'll do this later. The system's not working right now. I'll get it added to your account and I'll give you a call. And they did. And it did end up getting applied. So I guess, would I do it again? Probably. I don't know if I'd go out of my way.
So what I hear is you would want to do it at a sufficient scale to justify 20 to 40 minutes of your time and a whole lot of trust.
Yes.
I love the fact that you covered so many things. Like, again, we didn't discuss this before. We didn't even create show notes for ourselves on this one. But that one open-ended question, and maybe that's because we're just so on the same page here, but that one open-ended question, you covered, you know, travel hacking. You covered not just travel hacking, but, like, you know, even gift card arbitrage. You covered, you know, the casino program, and you covered, you know, in general gambling. I love the fact that you just covered them all so quickly. So small casino, a potential for opportunity for freebies. I thought that was really interesting that one of your traveling companions had kind of taken that separate approach, that approach of just going slots. It sounds to me like as we get more and more data points, if you go exclusively slots, you have a higher probability of getting some freebies. I think we sort of anecdotally knew that. This adds another data point that I think starts to really show that. And it makes so much sense because
it's pretty much a hard and fast rule when it comes to casinos, especially if you're looking for complimentary cruises, that table gaming is going to be very, very hard. You need to be doing high roller amounts of volume of dollars of betting to be able to get, because just the theoretical loss on a table game is so much lower than on a slot machine, you know, and a slot machine, they're just going to make more money off of you theoretically if you're sitting in front of that machine and hitting spin, you know, and consistently.
Many feel that the table games are more fun. So why are you going to incentivize people to do the more fun thing?
That's a good point as well. They don't have to incentivize people to gamble at blackjack or craps or whatever. And in many ways, they're giving you a better deal because, you know, the odds are much more in your favor on those table games. That being said, you know, I do think that there's absolutely opportunity where, you know, they probably overstate some of the theoretical. I mean, you can definitely lose much less than the cost of a cruise that you may receive in benefit, you know, or the value to you. It's just like I think there's asymmetrical value with redeeming miles. I think there's definitely asymmetric value with what you can potentially receive from a casino, you know, in one of these cruise ships. But definitely if that is your goal and you like slot gambling, then definitely the slot gambling is the way to go. That is the rule. If you're going to be doing blackjack or, you know, craps or something like that, you really shouldn't expect very much unless you are putting down, you know, hundreds of dollars per, you know, bet. You're not going to get very much.
And we'll just say, as we say in many things, in miles and points, your miles may vary.
Well, it's gambling, you know, everyone's going to take a chance and, you know, sometimes you get lucky, right?
Exactly. So any final thoughts on your Princess Cruise?
I think there's definitely a demographic for Princess Cruises. I think if you're, you know, a retiree, you're planning on doing, you want a more sedate you know, more relaxing type of experience, I think Princess is probably right for you. But I think if you've got kids, I don't want to say that you can't get on a Princess cruise. I just think you just have to prepare yourself that you're going to be doing more of the entertaining of your kids than maybe, you know, some of the onboard entertainment staff.
No, I think that's a great point. And obviously, you know, Princess being another one of those premium cruise lines. So I really appreciate the fact that you're sharing all these experiences. I'm sure our listeners appreciate it as well.
Well, that's the show. Thanks for joining us, and we hope you enjoyed listening.
If you've enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a Mileonomics Patreon member and get access to even more in-depth miles, points, travel, and cruise content.
Until then, we hope your next story is a travel story.